including with the enemies of liberty, of our Enlightenment heritage, rule of law, and human rights. We are the unindicted co-conspirators of our own demise and the destruction of Russia, collapsing under the weight of its corruption and thievery.
A lot of energy, imagination, and time goes into describing the geopolitical world that we're in today. Some people call it a period of great power competition. Some call it a new Cold War. Others call it a multipolar world. It's easy to be overwhelmed by the constant casting and recasting of the terms used to describe the circumstances and events and even geography around us. Take, for instance, the Indo-Pacific term. But there's actually a reason for this effort. If you can accurately describe the world and describe it in a way that aligns with people's experience, it can be clarifying. If it's clarifying enough, it can orient people and give them the direction to see and to act. This kind of shared momentum is a precious thing in an era when all facts and assumptions are contested, when every issue can break into yet smaller differences, especially online. That came to mind when I read the text of a speech by the former president of Estonia, Tomas Hendrik Ilves. He was giving a speech at the Warsaw Security Conference to honor the jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. In doing so, he made an important point about what has changed since the end of the Cold War in what I thought was a relatable way. Ilves lamented the passing of what he called the moral clarity that had once existed in the perspective on world affairs while the Cold War was still ongoing. Clarity is certainly what's missing today in the West. Even phrases like why we fight or what we stand for no longer rally the public like they once would have. There are many reasons why we went from the moral clarity of that time to the confusion that we see today. And I suspect that one of the reasons is the way that we communicate. But part of the story is how we didn't see this era coming on in the first place. Maybe we were blind to the coming political upheavals because, as the de facto victors of the Cold War, and even that's debatable, there was a presumption that Western hopes and ideals would triumph across the world. Now, rather than at this point citing Francis Fukuyama's end of history thesis and saying that Fukuyama got it all wrong, I'll say this. The way the world changed made it hard for people in liberal democracies to see the threat from the changes. Rather than defend against the menace of authoritarianism, liberalism, and corruption, Western society, in fact, welcomed a lot of it with open arms. So it was with the West and China. So it was with the West and the post-Soviet states. But so it was also with the internet and Western values. The internet came from the United States, and Silicon Valley is located in the US. So it was assumed that the use of the internet and its associated technology supported a kind of California freedom for the world. It was very hard to see how people who claimed freedom might actually be doing the work of authoritarians within democracies. Yet, that happens every day in this era. Being located at the site of the birth of this new world blinds us to the way that our nations have become vulnerable. It turns out that the worst seat in the house for the next great global contest that is coming into focus after the Cold War is within democracies, which are blinded by our complacency and our ignorance for the new forms of power that are arrayed against us. For that reason, Ilves' speech at the Warsaw Security Conference is notable. Ilves' career brackets the end of the Cold War and the aftermath, a time he went from working for Radio Free Europe, helping to get uncensored news and information behind the Iron Curtain, to the era of Estonia's independence, the Baltic country he would later become president of and be in office when neighbor Russia mounted a massive weeks-long cyber attack, considered by many to be the first act of cyber war. So the memory of the moral clarity of the Cold War, or at least the part seen just outside the Iron Curtain, resonates today. Here's Ilves.
We in the West at least had the moral clarity to stand up to the thugs, to raise these issues with our governments and our parliaments in all possible international fora. helping to maintain that moral clarity, the commies were at least ideologically anti-capitalist. Commissars and Politburo members could hardly buy villas on the Riviera, ski chateaus in San Moritz, apartments in the U.S. president's skyscraper, or dock their 100-meter yachts in Saint-Tropez or Piraeus. On our side, taking money from totalitarians counted as bribery or espionage, bringing severe criminal penalties and social disgrace.
But so many of the rules from the end of the Cold War until now have changed. Laws have been relaxed, perhaps in part on the expectation that our system would eventually prevail, and the corrupt autocrats would come around to our ways. But also, the forces that triumphed within Western society and within Western economies were the interests of business, of moneymakers, of free traders, and of deregulators. I truly believe that in a democracy, every generation has to defend it anew. I remember in the immediate aftermath of the Cold War, the battle was to argue that democracy mattered. The prevailing notion embraced by a particular cohort of baby boomer politicians was that politics didn't matter. Business did. Trade did. And that's how we got ourselves into the problem we're in today. Politics always matters, because it always exists. It just depends on what quality of politics you get. And so, the rules changed, standards relaxed, tech and free trade created new possibilities, and people abandoned their Cold War mindsets. So then, we find ourselves in a different situation today, with democracies inherently vulnerable. As Ilves explains,
today, the liberal democratic West has abandoned that one-time clarity. We have become partners in crime, colluding with the enemies of liberty, of our Enlightenment heritage, rule of law, and human rights. We are the unindicted co-conspirators of our own demise and the destruction of Russia, collapsing under the weight of its corruption and thievery. In my brief laudatio to Alexei Navalny, I shall for that reason not focus on his immense contributions to exposing the miasma of corruption in Russia. That only serves to give us a smug and utterly false sense of moral superiority.
Ilves describes this as a stench.
To truly honor Alexei Navalny, we must instead confront the stench of our own liberal democratic West. The stench that swirls from our corrupt politicians and political parties, from our naive and greedy governments and even the most prestigious centuries-old universities. It swirls from businesses who prize profit over justice, truth, and freedom. It swirls from bankers, lawyers, and accountants who launder money and reputations.
Ilves' talk of clarity brings to mind for me what has been so unclear in this era of the internet, free trade, and until recently, the borderless exchange of goods, services, people, and ideas. What has been unclear is, for me, where exactly does democracy stand in this equation? Or how should it stand in this time? This is in contrast to past periods. If you went back to the end of World War II, for example, you'd have a generation of people who are lurching from one existential crisis, the World War, to another, the prospect of another World War. So for them, identifying existential challenges and acting decisively to address them was perhaps easier. These days, instead, we're coming from a very different place. So what we have now is endless debate, discussion, differences, and consumer choice. Yet, if you have a clear sense of the world that you're actually working towards, it makes that effort so much easier than the fog of confusion and conflicted intentions that we see today. Part of the challenge today is that we lack that orienting possibility of clarity that Ilves spoke of. So I thought his analogy of asking if people are, quote-unquote, unindicted co-conspirators of our demise to bring down our own society is a very apt way of describing the problem for citizens in a democracy. A clean democracy, a functional democracy, is not helpless. In fact, it should have the upper hand over the authoritarians. Corrupt society needs us. Ilves explains why.
Where there is no rule of law, where the autocrat can steal or take away anyone's property, his overriding fear is the Kantian categorical imperative might apply to him, that someone will do to him what he has done to enrich himself. Thus, the despot's only recourse is to ship his money to a place that enjoys rule of law, be it London or Dubai, New York or Tallinn, anywhere, where the Rechtsstaat means that people earn their wealth through work, not through theft or pumping it out of land that belongs to the population, which is just a more indirect form of theft. This rule of law has made us in the West prosperous. We know the state cannot illegally take away our property, but it also allows authoritarian regimes to maintain their stolen treasure and persecute people like Alexei Navalny as well as countless others.
When talking about partners, I would go further than Ilves, beyond dirty money and corrupt investors, to ideas as well. Again, with an eye to the possibility of moral clarity, people should ask themselves if they are collaborators with partners that would torpedo our own society and make a mockery of our values, of rule of law, of free expression, of independent courts, and a sovereign society. If you're an American conservative host, but you willingly amplify ideas and content from Hungary or from Russia, are you really upholding Western independence? Or are you partnering in the destruction of your own nation, all because you can't stand liberals? If you become partners to forces that oppose genuine freedom, the freedom from corruption, the freedom from fear, then we have to stop and think how we can prevent ourselves from becoming the hole in the shield of our own national sovereignty. This isn't easy. Because we believe in freedom, we're at a structural disadvantage in this contest. We have to respect the truth and follow it where it takes us. As media analyst Vasily Gatov has pointed out, during the Cold War, the time that's remembered for that clarity, the ability for democracies to defend themselves from the division spread by communists was difficult. In 2015, Gatov wrote, "The West crafted its own system to counter Soviet propaganda and wage its own campaign. Unlike the USSR, where ideology was the top priority of the governing party, Western countries needed a lot of organizational engineering to get their systems up and running. It was a difficult task for them, as most governments in the West were either legally prohibited from owning mass media outlets or were very limited in their access to and control of editorial policy. Yet, in 2021, here we are again. The drive toward polarization in Western democracy nudges citizens to partner, if only in terms of content and ideas, with authoritarians abroad. If denigrating Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden is of such existential importance that you don't mind echoing material spread by the Kremlin, then you are effectively partnering with the Kremlin on this topic. If your hatred of your partisan rival at home outweighs your love of your own nation, the possibility of this moral clarity, as Ilves has described it, is gone. Maybe a shared ideal in democracies would be to find a path to that moral clarity. Now, that's not a call for moral certainty, which evokes mindless sloganeering. There's enough of that around. And it's also not nostalgia for the past world of the Cold War, which was historically unusual for the way the globe was split into two competing ideologies. Things will just be messier today. National or cultural pride and identity are probably stronger motivators than the ideologies of the past. But the possibility of a moral clarity serves a purpose in a time of increasing complexity that seems to bind together what would have once been disparate topics. Facebook regulation affects disinformation research, which affects geopolitics, and that affects politics, all of it interrelated. In this environment, even the pursuit and possibility of clarity, especially for those in leadership positions, would seem to be an imperative, a moral imperative. What could drive leaders to think this way? Maybe something like a sense of civic duty. There's a need for an organizing idea that can sit atop all of this complexity, especially for those in positions that can make a difference, those choosing investments, those making decisions on funding, those who hold office. This is especially true as our interconnected world essentially forces us all to be partners, even unwittingly, with forces that can be hostile to democracy. If we're all interlinked in forced partnerships, which is what interdependence looks like, something that gives direction could support democracy's ideals. It won't be a magic bullet, but it will offer a sense of orientation in this endless, dizzying expanse of information, activity, and choice. So, has the NBA or Hollywood become tools for the Chinese Communist Party to enforce its value systems globally? Is this university keeping silent for fear of offending Beijing and the flows of money its students bring? The notion that we can all potentially be partners in the corruption and destruction of our own society by aligning ourselves with the corrupt interests of these figures is a great place to start thinking about the best ways to defend democracy. Where do we put in the firewalls? When do we say enough? The cost is too high. The more people who start asking the question and demanding the answers, even if they involve dislocating but not necessarily destructive pain for markets, for the economy, or even for web traffic, the closer democratic society can get toward the clarity that Ilves speaks about. This shouldn't be the stuff of reports and studies as much as policies or even marches. It's the stuff of a message that can go and challenge the illiberalism that shadows democracy. As Ilves noted in his speech, the time for admiring the problem is over.